This is New Home Insights, the John Burns Real Estate Consulting Podcast. I'll be your host, Dean Worley. As the title promises, we're going to bring you insights into everything housing, latest trends, innovations, observations, and issues of the day. We'll bring in colleagues here at John Burns and also some major industry players from all across the country. This podcast is going to be quick, fun, but also hopefully make you think. So see you here every couple of weeks. Now let's get to it. Welcome to the latest installment of New Home Insights with John Burns Real Estate Consulting. Today, we have as our guest, John Burns.
Hey, Dean.
We are going to talk about something very near and dear to John's heart today. That's demographics. Specifically, we're going to talk about demographics and homeownership, or how demographics and demographic cohorts are differentially affected by some four major factors, things like economic trends, governmental policies, and how this changes these demographics and influences whether or not they own a home, whether or not they want to own a home or can own a home. So this comes from a book that John wrote with Chris Porter called Big Shifts Ahead. It's got a ton of other concepts in there, but John, why don't you give an introduction to the overarching concept of the book before we dig into the specifics?
Yeah, it took me 9,000 hours of research to come down to two simple concepts. So I'll give you both concepts. One is, if we'll just break down the generations into decade born, it makes our life so much easier because we start comparing 10-year periods to 10-year periods. Everybody knows what year they were born. The history becomes much better. So that was number one, instead of just making generalizations about millennials, for example, who were, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and my daughter, who just graduated from high school, are both millennials, and they're kind of in different stages of their lives. And the second point is, and the reason we started the book, there was so much noise out here about how things are changing. We were able to come up with something we called a 4-5-6 rule, which all the noise is in four different buckets. It's either being, and this goes back to the 1930s. It's either been caused by, some shift has been caused by a government policy, would be one, a change in the economy, which would be two, some new technology that came along, which would be three, and then some societal shifts, like, you know, having a child and then getting married instead of the other way around, have all been the big game changers. And I called it 4-5-6 because those four influencers impact the five different life stages very differently. The exact same thing impacts a child differently than a young adult, different than a family, different than somebody retired. And then the six would be the six key questions executives are trying to answer in their business. Who, what, when, where, why, and how is something changing, and how should I change my business?
Okay. So that's the overarching. That's big shifts in a nutshell. That's a good nutshell. It's a great book. Everybody listening should go buy it right now if they don't have it already.
9,000 hours of research for $20. I think it's a pretty good deal.
That's absolutely fair. So we're going to drill down into how those first, really the first four factors, am I right? How those governmental policies, economic shifts, new technology, and societal shifts have specifically impacted homeownership and the different, those different 1930s, 1940s, et cetera, cohorts. What do you want to start? How do we start that?
Well, I'll give a little bit of history and then I'll tell you which. Maybe I'll start with today. So government policies. 70% of all the mortgages being made today, the policies are being written by presidential appointees. And this is new since the Great Recession. So the oversight for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is a group called FHFA, who is currently Mel Watt, and he is determining the policies. He was appointed by Obama, and President Trump gets to replace him at the end of the year. Then you've got 24% of all the mortgages being made by FHA. Prior to the downturn, it was typical that FHA was about 4%. Today, it's 24%, with the policies being set by Ben Carson and the people that work for Ben and HUD. And then you've got VA and USDA, which are also governmental appointees. So mortgage policies can change here pretty rapidly. And they have in the past. You go back to those born in the 30s and 40s, they got to an 80% home ownership rate. A lot of that helped by the GI Bill, which was 100% down payment, 100% loan. to vets, and every male was a vet, so they got to 80% home ownership. That policy doesn't really exist today, but we do have a lot of 95% and 97% loans being made by FHA or being approved with mortgage insurance by Fannie and Freddie. It's just not as aggressive as the past. So I
would you say that? Go ahead.
Well, I'm a bear on home ownership. If people are thinking it's going to be in the upper 60s again, government policy is going to have to get more aggressive for that to happen. And I'm not somebody who's an expert on what policy should be. I'm just an expert on you set the policy and I'll tell you what's going to happen.
Yeah. Do you think it's fair to say that the government, at least in a variety of ways, has never been this involved in homeownership? Is that an overstatement given, you know, how big an impact the GI Bill had?
Well,
in post-war?
Yeah, so homeownership from 1900 to 1950 was in the mid 40% range. So the GI Bill took it, and the growth of Fannie and Freddie actually took it all the way up to the mid 60s. So that was probably more involved. And then they backed off a little bit and we relied on the traditional banks to make the mortgages. And now we're back to the government setting more policy.
Yeah. Okay. And so that enabled some of those, for lack of a better term, older generations to become, and of course still are, huge, huge homeowners. As you said, over 80% of those folks own a home. How's that been changing?
So we'll stick with the government policy. You used to be able to deduct most of your interest. But now the standard deduction for a married couple is $24,000. So you're getting $24,000 in deductions. And if you have mortgage interest, the first $24,000 in deductions you come up with don't help you with your taxes. So tax policy is not really super favorable to home ownership either. And we're seeing, and I know you're seeing this in your consulting business, more and more homeowners who are older sell their home, tap into their equity, and rent, particularly in some of these urban areas. And we're also seeing a lot of them follow their kids and grandkids to wherever they've got a job. And maybe they intend to own a home in that area at some point, but at first they go and rent a while. So we're seeing falling home ownership. There was a slight exception in the last year. But the trend over the last 7 to 10 years has been falling home ownership amongst the older cohort.
So keeping with the government policy, though, do you think in terms of arresting that slightly downward trend over the last several years in home ownership, is government policy likely the only thing that would change that?
Well, the economy, I mean, there's a lot of things that come into play here. The economy is very important. I think if we can come up with a solution to build housing more affordably so new homes can be less expensive, that could change the game here too. There are a lot of things that could change the game.
Okay. How about economics? How's that acted differently on the various generations over the last few decades?
So again, those born in the 30s and 40s have had, during their working career, they had doubled the GDP growth that those born in the 70s and 80s have had. I mean, double. So when you go your entire career, like those born in the 70s have, I mean, they're 20 years in the workforce now. The average GDP growth per person during their working lives is 1.1%. You know, overall, it's about 2% because you had population growth in. But when you have that kind of a lousy economy for most of your working life, it's hard to get ahead. It's hard to save a down payment. The income growth has been pretty anemic. It's the economy that's been causing that. And you know,
the downward.
The Great Recession, for example, and this is a good example of the 4-5-6 rule. So Great Recession, everybody knows what happened. If you were born in the 1990s, you were just a kid, but you saw what happened to people that had too much debt, you became very conservative with debt. People born in the 1990s now are more likely to be using debit cards than credit cards, for example. They have a lot in common with those born in the 1930s who were born into the Great Depression who were afraid of too much debt. And then those born in the 1980s, this Great Recession, they graduated from college with a lot of student debt right into a five-year horrible economy. They got off to a really slow start, so they had a different experience. Those born in the 1970s, Dean had the highest home ownership rate ever at their 10-year reunion, because that's when it was the early 2000s, and the lowest home ownership rate in decades at their 20-year reunion, because they're the foreclosure generation. Yeah.
So they all shared stories of their REO or their short sale at their 20-year reunion, and everybody could cry together. Do you think, though, because the 19th Depression was, let's call it, a generalized economic thing, it affected every economic sector, I believe, right? This most, the last one, the one in the 2008 recession we're talking about, that seemed to impact the housing industry even more than other sectors. So do you think this younger generation is particularly snake bit about housing
in a
way that the 1930s generation maybe was more general?
I do, and because they equate a recession with foreclosures, because that's the recession then they remember. You know, that was not the case with the recession in 2000, for example. So, and even the little mini recession we had in the mid-1990s, but this generation thinks recession, oh, that's housing, it's a bad time to buy a home. And we're starting to see listings tick back up a little bit, not because there's anything wrong with housing, but because I think there's recession on the horizon headlines these days.
Yeah. And this younger folks have been, you know, we've all talked about how they've sort of entered these life stages later than their previous cohorts. In fact, you talk about that in the book quite a bit. I wonder how much of that isn't just sort of their psychological wanting to when they get married, when they have kids, etc., but it is the fact that they were snake bit so much, or at least really scarred by the recession, and don't want to go into those mature things because that means they're going to have to buy a home and settle down.
Well, I think there's an element of truth to that. I'm actually going to stick my neck out here a little bit. I think people are going to start getting married earlier because it was delayed by the recession, and that's now in the rearview mirror. I think people are going to start getting married a little bit earlier. And, you know, we kind of spin.
You mean the very young people who are in their, I don't know, teens, early 20s are going to start getting
married. Well, I think the average age is maybe 26, 27 now. Maybe okay. It comes back down to 25. But this gets spun too negatively. I think we also need to remember we've had 9 years of economic growth. So people that are 4 or 5 years out of college right now have only known a good economy, although they have that fears of the recession. They're more likely than any generation before them to have both him and her as a college educated person. And if they're buying a home at the age of 28, they're both pretty far along in their careers and making some decent bucks. And the new home industry has really responded to this by, you know, the new home guys call it my entry-level home, but it's typically more expensive than the median resale home price. It's just a more affordable new home. That's exactly who they're selling to. It's a higher density, small lot, great location, but probably above the median home price in an area. And that's exactly what these people want.
Yeah. That'll be a different podcast that we definitely want to talk about one of these days, of how we do get to new homes at a lower cost. You know, is it manufacturing or modular homes? What's it going to be? Is it always going to be drive to qualify, or are we going to have different solutions? But yeah, let's do that. Let's do that another time.
We will. I took a tour of the Clayton plant in Tennessee last week. It was fascinating. They're putting out 10 homes a day, start to finish, out of this one plant. It's amazing.
Yeah, I do think we see a lot more of that. We have to. Do you want to switch over to new technologies and how new technology has impacted these cohorts over time?
Yeah. So one of the things that surprised me in the book was how birth control technology basically stopped births for a while. And now it actually, until this year, was bringing it back with IVF. But probably the biggest change in the housing industry has been the smartphone and the information you can get in seconds on your smartphone now. It's really disrupting a lot of people. It's disrupting real estate agents, because I don't need a real estate agent to know what's for sale. I don't need a real estate agent to know what schools or, you know, this house goes to. All of that information is at your fingertips. But I need a real estate agent to walk me through the process. And so the real estate agent, for example, has become more of an expert and less of a transaction facilitator, if you will.
Yeah, they have to figure out what their value add is, don't they?
Yeah, and I know some home builders will disagree with me on this, but hear me out. The new technologies that have been developed by Realtor and Zillow and Trulia, were built by the resale market to sell resale homes. And that's what people have got, are using on their phone. And yes, there are new homes in there, but they don't show necessarily as well as they should. They don't have a real price. They don't have a real photo. You're not certain when you can move in. Like a resale home, you have some relative certainty. It's just, it's different. And I think the home builders are behind the curve with the smartphone, if you will. But I think they'll get there at some point.
No, I think you're right. It seems like, again, I'm sure many of our home builder friends will disagree, but it seems like the home builders built their websites a while back now, and they were great, and they were state of the art, and they were cutting edge, but not so much anymore. And the real estate agents of resellers having to value add have become pretty sophisticated with that.
Yeah, they're great tools once you've got somebody interested in coming out to visit your community. But I think we're missing people to get them interested in visiting your community in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. And the new and younger folks are definitely they're savvy. They're savvy buyers. They're all college educated and they have the debt to prove it. And they're good with numbers. So they have that instant access to information that you talked about and they know how to use it. So they're pretty smart when they're negotiating. I work a lot, of course, in Northern California, in the Bay Area, and those buyers, half of them are engineers. They're working for tech companies. They know they've done all their homework, and they come in sometimes and they know more than the sales agents. So
did you see the Redfin survey that came out last year? I doubted it at first, but then I got into the methodology and it was solid. They interviewed something like 4,000 people who bought a home last year. And they asked them, at any point in your search process, did you make an offer on a home you hadn't seen in person? 6% of boomers, 28% of Gen X, and 45% of millennials were making an offer on a home they had not even toured because they had kind of toured it on their phone. There's videos, there's photos, they know everything about it. I'm sure it's not a binding contract. It's a, hey, I'd like to bid on this home and here's my offer. But that's a big change.
And there could be some changes. Technology, like VR, virtual reality, has some opportunities there to not build models at all or build fewer models because younger buyers are going to be able to have that same experience with a thing on top of their head.
So can I give you an example from one of our clients who shared this at the design summit we had in March? This is a big home builder. I won't name their name because I didn't ask for permission, but they build model homes on a test case and have consumers walk through them and then criticize them. This is one of the largest home builders in the country. And they started doing it with virtual reality, and they got to the point now where consumers walking through the exact homes and consumers walking through them just with virtual reality were giving them the exact same feedback. And so they said, we don't need to build the physical homes anymore. The virtual reality is getting to the right answer. And that's going to be a big change for them.
For me personally, I get nauseous watching Blair Witch Project way back when. So I would probably throw up in their office. I may not be the right person for that. But I think it's a great opportunity to change things up. And I think it's inevitable. You're going to have that more manufactured homes, more VR, fewer models. I mean, it makes sense and it'll bring down some cost.
Right, right. My son plays around a lot in the VR, and the technology gets better and better and better every 6 months. A lot better.
As long as it doesn't make me sick. That's the key. When they don't make me sick, that'll be the benchmark.
I think that's where we're headed, Dean. In fact, we may already be there.
The Dean doesn't get sick test is the key, I think. Any other new technology or any other technological shifts that are going to be impactful or have been impactful?
Well, that's the one I'm thinking about the most. Everybody's talking about driverless cars. I think we'd have to do a whole episode on that one.
So. You know, I could see that impact in urban product in particular, because it makes, to the degree Uber and Lyft and driverless cars make the urban experience a little more convenient for getting out of there and to and from, it can open up some more folks into that particularly market location than would otherwise be true. It just makes it easier. Or even the reverse could even happen, where you live on the outskirts of the true urban core, but you know you're going to be going there a lot, and having access to driverless cars anytime you want can make that a little more palatable, I think.
Well, and I'll just give you one example. So one piece of consumer research we were doing is the young buyers on a location, they have a conversation about well, how far is it to Uber to my, how expensive is it to Uber to my favorite bar? So, you know, and because that's part of the location decision now is that that's what I do. And I've seen
sales offices with literally on the board or something, we'll say eight minute Uber to downtown or something. Something like that. And
great example.
It's a key thing. It's a key consideration because this was an area where there's a lot of relatively young, especially couples and kind of early young families. And they're thinking about that. Even with a kid or two, they're still going to go hang out in downtown on weekends. So,
right. I mean, these are all shifts. We just need to design our communities differently now for all these things, which is actually really exciting. And what I think about the new home community, the resales were not built with any of this in mind. So this is all an opportunity for home builders. It's just a different opportunity than existed 10 years ago.
How about smart homes? Is that something we're going to see explode? I mean, a lot of the big builders are really, really looking hard at that and already acting upon it. You see that becoming the norm?
I do, but these smart homes so far really aren't that smart, Dean. I mean, it's really nothing.
It has
more.
An Alexa.
What, you can put an Echo in the home and get the Wi-Fi into every corner in most resale homes too. But I do think it is the right thing to do, and it's not very expensive.
Yeah, I know. You can turn on your air conditioning before you get home. Things like that, little things like that, I think will become absolutely the norm, and you'll do it from your phone, from an app. That'll be. We'll see though. Who controls that? Is it going to be Amazon or Google or the home builders? My guess. I wouldn't bet against Amazon or Google.
I wouldn't either. And a few months ago, Amazon hired a mortgage exec. So stay tuned. What's going to happen there?
Okay. Cue ominous music for all of our home builder folks listening right now. Do you want to shift over to our fourth major influencing topic: societal shifts?
You know, the one I think about the most, and I've been presenting on this a lot, and I just get the most blank stares on, is what Title IX started. So when Title IX was passed in 1972, 58% of all college degrees went to men. Today, 58% of all college degrees go to women. And we devoted an entire chapter to this. But I'm thinking that kind of a dramatic shift has to impact housing. And I really haven't gotten great answers or great results as to why, other than I do know when you're talking about a young single adults, women are twice as likely to buy a home than men. So I know that some builders have been having great success selling homes to single women, much more so than men. But other than that, I really haven't figured out what that dramatic shift means for housing.
Say that again. So women are twice as likely.
Yeah, they're twice as likely to be buying homes unmarried than their high school classmates who are male.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're experiencing that. They have. I mean, they're as we know from the late life stage decisions, at least so far, no one's getting married. And they're making income, they're college educated, they're making that decision to buy a home.
Right, but that's not the white picket fence 30 miles outside the labor force. They're buying something closer in near things to do with a smaller yard. And you know, but other than those type of generalizations, I really haven't figured out what this has been. And particularly for dual income couples now where she's the breadwinner, you would think that there would be some differences in the house if he's staying at home, because the rate of stay-at-home dads is rising much faster than the rate of stay-at-home moms, which is rising too. But I haven't seen a lot of that merchandised in the homes or homes designed differently for that reason.
That's interesting. At the very least, in terms of is that kind of old school patronizing, you know, you're speaking to the wife for the emotional connection and the husband for the dollars and cents. Those days are thankfully over. Because of this sea change in women's income and education, so they're at least an equal part in that home buying decision, and that's great, I think. Okay, so anything else on societal? Anything in terms of doing maybe sort of wrap up if you want to on how these kind of these four major factors have impacted, going back to home ownership, these cohorts in home ownership differently?
Well, I'm more forward-looking with this. So, you know, we go into our clients and we go into the board meetings and we get questions about what's this technology going to do? What's the disruption of retail going to be? What happens if we have a recession? And I think with this framework now, okay, well, let's just not make a general comment that doesn't do anybody any good. Let's talk about what this is going to do to your entry-level buyers. Let's talk about what this is going to do to your senior housing business. And it just brings so much more clarity to this. I'm trying to reduce the hours of time wasted on these discussions to make them more productive. And that's if we've done that, then I feel we've made a great contribution to the industry.
I could not agree more, but I'm biased.
Yes, me too.
Well, this has been good. So we talked about how four major decades-long, really, kinds of factors, government policy, economic shifts and trends, new technologies and societal shifts have impacted different demographics. And really more, like John, you just said, how looking forward, they're going to continue to impact different demographics, right? Government policies are clearly going to impact homeownership. Whoever Trump chooses to replace Watts will be critical and what their policies are. And obviously, of course, the next economic shift would be an important part of that. Technology, honestly, if I had to pick one, I know economics and government policies are huge macro issues, but on the margins, technology, I think, is going to be critical because it's so fast changing and we're so quick to adopt new technologies now that I think we're going to have to, home builders will have to stay on top of that more than ever before.
Yeah, and those are long-term changes. You know, economy and government policy can be short-term, but these new technologies are here to stay.
Yep. And Alexa, since it's listening to you right now, Amazon already knows what you want. Oh my God, I think my Alexa just turned on. I'm not kidding. So, okay. Well, this has been a good, I like this. I enjoy this. It's been very, very thoughtful. Anything else you want to end with, John?
No, I think we're good, Dean. Always fun to go through these things.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Well, hopefully you enjoyed this latest episode of New Home Insights. John, our guest that game was John Burns, who coincidentally has a company called John Burns Real Estate Consulting. Please join us next time. See you then.